Yeah, thank you. Can you hear me? Everybody, wow, there are a lot of people over here. I didn't see. We're experimenting. I have one pair of glasses that lets me see you really well, and one that lets me see the poems really well. So right now I'm going for you, but I might have to switch. So we'll see how that goes. I'm going to read a couple of poems from Houseware Woman, and then I'd like to read you some poems from a manuscript I'm currently working on. My mother likes to tell how when I was 10, she sent me to fetch a sweater from the top right drawer of her dresser. How when I came back, I said, the drawer was stuck, but I looked in the other 8 drawers. She thinks this is funny. I think it's the distance between a world where anything not in its place simply isn't, and mine, where things are always showing up where they don't belong. The way yesterday in the checkout line, I saw the white hem of the clerk's undershirt hanging untucked and wrinkled, and you were suddenly there at the edge of the bed, shoulders hunched forward, long arms reaching back to peel the shirt over your head. Thank you. I don't have a lot to say about most of my poems. I'll just read them. I think they'll do it. Okay. Green Glass Bird. From a box marked Lillian's desk, I lift the green glass bird I bought when I was 7. The Christmas I was old enough to buy her present myself with $2 my father pressed into my hand. I hold it up to the basement bulb. Remember how she kept it on the coffee table all those years, glass to glass. Remember her hands cradling its weight. Remember the bristle of rug on my arms, my cheek, as I watched her wait for late afternoon sun to ignite the green heart of that bird. North Carolina, West Virginia, Michigan, green glass bird, in and out of packing boxes, onto the sill, the curio shelf, at last, her desk, the winter and spring of oxygen tanks and feeding tubes, where it caught the inadequate light until there were no more breaths. In the basement with boxes, I rock on my heels, cold bird cuddled to my neck like a frightened cat, and I stroke it, murmur, stupid bird, poor fat green bird. A careless move could crack you on this painted concrete floor. Did you think it was you that she loved? Poor bird, it was me. It was me. How's the sound? Okay? Okay, I'm going to read one more poem from this book, and this is my tribute to Muriel Rukeyser, who's, well, one of my heroines for me and for West Virginia, in which I say a few things to Muriel Rukeyser. Tomatoes still half orange, half green, impatience eke out final blooms. In the lurking of November's certain frost, I forget the heat that swelled the raspberries, and for a moment, I am only cold. I am reading your lectures. You say, if we are free people, we are also, in a sense, free to choose our past. At every moment, to choose the tradition we will bring to the future. I twist the yellowing hosta, pick wilted purple from chrysanthemums. I sweep red hemlock needles from the walk and save them for my acid-loving plants, which sets me thinking ahead again to warmth. This moment I choose what plants know of sacrifice and the meaning of death. Across the street, my neighbors are having a Halloween party. A man comes dressed in a huge cardboard box with ductwork arms. His costume won't fit through the door. He shouts, "I'm a charmer, motherfucker." My neighbors get a citation. But this once I am glad for the noise, glad to be awake. You were right. There has been much silence, the silence of fear, of the impoverished imagination, which avoids and makes a twittering and is still. Yesterday, I walked downtown to see Neil Newfield's photos at the Mac. There's no heartbreak there you didn't see at Golly Bridge 20 years before I was born. Tunnelers choking with silicosis, 476 known dead then, tossed in cornfields and ditches, 1,000 more to die. For lack of masks, mine owners wouldn't go without. Soon the witnesses will all be dead. What must you think of the pale impression I leave in this world, that I am less moved by war and drought than I am moved by this just past full moon? But surely I don't have to explain to you the moon, the way it lights the edge of a scudding cloud that hides and then exposes it in a trapezoid of aluminum siding, porch roof, and rail, the downspout angling from gutter to terracotta pipe. Does it matter what it is that finally makes me feel? Late October, this world is broken. Someone will hate my daughter for loving a woman. Someone will say God sanctions this hate. But you would recognize the seeking, marvelous look of those who lose and use and know their lives. She is my child. I'm cold again. I pull the blanket to my chin. The moon gleams in and out and sews at least the sky together again. Thank you. Okay, these are some newer poems. We'll try them out. In the title of this poem, the dog star refers not to the rock band, but to Sirius, the brightest star in the night sky. Because even the dog star hid, because the red bud shivered and its wet hearts whispered, "This is not your city," I cursed the tree and spurned the porch, useless swing, I spit on the grass. Bright the room's unnatural light, where I unfurled a moon in a green paper sky to shut them out. In the brushstroke pond, one heron fished unperturbed as ever. The other fixed on me its tunnel eye, black the starless eye that drew me in. The day he ran over the dog, they were driving home from church. They'd come to the log that was their makeshift gate. The man and boy were there, strangers waving their arms, yelling, "Wait, stop." But he didn't stop. He was angry that they were trespassing, or simply angry, and the truck's front wheel hit the dog's front leg, maybe broke it. The dog and man and boy crying out. She couldn't imagine his coldness. It shocked her. She wanted to uncouple herself right then and forever, and though she remembered words she wanted to take back, what her own hands had done, she knew she wouldn't love him again, hadn't loved him for a long time. She climbed down out of the cab, knelt in the road with two strangers, their dog, offered to drive them to their car, pay the vet. She wanted to erase the anguish on their faces, the dog's pain, her silent complicity. The man lifted the dog, The man, dog in his arms, and the boy started walking. They wouldn't even tell her their names. The title of this poem is actually a part of a line from Gerald Stern's poem Winter Thirst, which is in American Sonnets. And what the void was like. What I feared. Being abandoned, deserted, no, vacant, as in tenantless, having never been filled, inhabited, lived in, taken up. The missing floorboards, how to cross, therefore how to get up in the morning, while outside the milkweed pods swelling and bursting. Weightless, as in to walk down green to the bridge, to the river, for that I needed the sidewalk's grab, else out of control. Lacking, without, no, less than lonely loss, rather null, the empty set. Tunneling into cotton or dust, there was nothing to push against. I was so thirsty. This poem is a Pittsburgh poem, believe it or not. It was born in the Whole Foods parking lot. It's its only connection. Outside the grocery store, I thought the sparrow was tame. It never flew, no matter how close anyone came. We sat at an iron table, sharing dark chocolate with sea salt and cracked black pepper. At the curb, it stretched its feathered body, craning upward, but its wings only shuddered. We broke off pieces from a chocolate bar. We were laughing. When only dark crumbs were left, we pressed our fingers into the creases of the wrapper. Later, my tongue found pepper between my teeth. I don't know if the sparrow ever flew. On White Avenue, a maple leaf drifted to the broken sidewalk. You'd know the place, past First Ward School, where AA meets now, but before the crest of the hill, before the road narrows so only one car can pass at a time. It was 93 degrees. Everything that could grew a green riot along that road when this single leaf fell. Along its veins, yes, still bright green, but yellow taking over toward the edge, brown spot widening on one lobe, though the leaf remained supple and glittered as if sprinkled with its own sugar. Though I couldn't say if it was sweet, I didn't touch it with my tongue. Even now, on my bed, as it curls its increasingly papery skin, flecks of light, here on a vein. Here, where brown is a pond in a yellow field. Here, where one tip begins to bleed red. Okay, I have two more poems, but unless my memory is really getting bad, I think I forgot to say, I'm really glad to be reading with Mike. I haven't seen you for such a long time. It's really nice. And it's an honor to read with Michael Worcester, who was my first teacher. So thank you for sharing the mic with me. The title of this song is Black Coffee, which is a song that Ella Fitzgerald made famous. It was written by Paul Webster and Sonny Burke in 1948. My mother was in her 20s at that time. And this is a song that I heard from a very early age. And there's one line from the song that shows up in the poem. Black coffee. November, 1 o'clock. Flash of awning, campers cramming every lot this side of town. Sky so clear, no cloud can hide, and the street floods blue and gold all the way to Mountaineer Field. I'm inside sipping coffee while Ella croons through speakers turned low, because any day I'll trade colliding muscle and bone for a latte and this song I've known since I was 5. Though never once did I sit with the woman who sang it to me. Never once, china cups warming our hands, neither one of us tolerating cold, our fingers blue. Her coffee would have been black, mine milk and sugared caramel, if I'd learned to drink it at all, which I never did until she was gone. Not once did I share a cup of Joe with the woman I called mother. Not once commiserate over a steaming cup, my disapproval too thick, a hardness I couldn't break. But I'm talking to the shadows, and what I'd give to see her lean back in the chair next to mine, legs crossed at the knee, her shoe slipping off at the heel. And if she can't light her camel in here, let her wave it in crooked tobacco-stained fingers. I swear I won't flinch or cringe. I walk Grandview, looking for a house she lived in once. I saw a photo 20 years ago. And no one I ever knew gave in so calmly to her death after giving in to nothing all her life. You who could curse like a sailor, you in your furs, your feathered hats, you in your broken shoes. And this is the last one. It's called Anniversary. What softens the past? Reinvention? Slow molt, feather by feather? Brittle bodies slough and stretch? Let me tell you how it was with me. Not lost, dislocated, stranger I wanted to say no to. Beyond broken, how many nights I woke bitter, adrenaline's bite in my mouth. When the healer pulled the long tape stuck with blood and hair like flies, with mirror shards, paint, steel filings pulled hand over hand until my chest rose. Shall I tell you that my right eye has begun to turn outward, that the pain behind my orbital bones increases? What quiets the memory? Weariness? Can't haul this another step? Or a loosening, like giving in to rain, letting the coat fall open to rain music, the thousand glistening rain mirrors? This is how it was with me. My skin drank. When the healer pulled the long tape, tugged until my chest rose and the last inch let go of my heart, hawthorn came. White blossoms swept every chamber. Not a return to who I was. Hummingbird drunk on Rose of Sharon shelters in the hemlock. See-through wings flip back as if they could touch the spine, and forward the fragile spine arches. Thank you.